ghosts, hauntings, UFOs, Bigfoot, aliens, shadow people, vampires, werewolves, demons. Blurring the line between the normal and the paranormal, Harrisburg Area Paranormal Society presents The Blurred Line. Here are your hosts, Sue Shinsky, John Curley, and Matt Haas.
Good evening, everyone, or good morning, or good afternoon, wherever you are. This is Sue Shinsky, and I am one of the hosts of The Blurred Line. I'm here with my partner in crime, John Curley. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing great. How are you, Sue?
Wonderful. Did you have a nice holiday?
Yes, and it's very freaking cold out.
It was warmer in Juneau today. It was 40 degrees warmer in Juneau, Alaska than it was in Pennsylvania.
Like minus 20 when I got this morning. I'm like, what in the hell is going on with this?
I know. It should be leaving us, and we'll be in the 50s by Saturday, so that'll be fun.
This weather's crazy.
Well, before we get started tonight, I want to ask you what your New Year's resolution is, because I'm nosy, and I'm sure you have one.
I don't have one.
You don't?
No.
Oh, well, that's not fun.
I'm not making it anymore because I always break it. So.
Oh, all right. Well, then I won't tell mine. So tonight, I know I'm having like a fangirl, nerdy, geeky moment because I'm really excited for our guest tonight. I have been listening to Jim Harold for a million years, it seems. And he is the host of some amazing shows, Paranormal Podcast, Jim Harold's Campfire, and Weird News Radio. He's authored two books, Jim Harold's Campfire, True Ghost Stories and Ghost Stories, Jim Harold's Campfire 2. And I would really, really like to welcome Jim Harold to the show. Welcome.
Well, thank you, guys. Thank you, Sue. Thank you, John. So good to be here. And that's very kind of you to say. And so glad to get a chance to talk to you all and your audience tonight.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I found you on Twitter. Oh, my gosh. It had to be like 7 or 8 years ago, I guess.
Yeah, it's been going on 9 years now that I've been doing the podcasting on the paranormal. So it's like an eon in internet time.
I think so. And the fact that you're still doing it, and I honestly think that you're one of the reasons why there's so many paranormal radio shows. You know, you and Art Bell, and I would put you in the same category as Art Bell and George Norrie. And
wow. Well, that's the I don't know if I put myself there, but thank you so much. That's very sweet.
Oh,
that's
you're
very kind.
Well, I really think that you all have had a lot to do with influencing, you know, popular media, and you know, you are the most downloaded podcast, and I like listening to yours even more than my own. So not that that's a glowing recommendation, but I really, really do enjoy your podcast, and I'm really excited tonight. And I really wanted to talk to you a little bit more. You've written the first book with your campfire stories from your podcast, you know, The Campfire, and you have the second book coming out. I'm halfway through it, and mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying the stories, and I really like the fact that you can really tell the personality of the person telling the story comes through.
Yeah, what I tried to do with the books and with the first one and now the second one, which came out a little before Halloween last year, and working on a third one now for release at least by this Halloween, if not a little sooner, is I really tried to is take them and edit them very lightly. I didn't want it to be Jim Harold telling someone else's story. I wanted it to be the person telling the story, because the truth is, as you know, Sue, a lot of people may not listen to podcasts. You know, we're growing all the time, and internet radio and podcasts are growing all the time. But there are a lot of people who have never heard of a podcast or just now starting to become aware. But everybody can relate to a book, whether it's a paperback book or it's an electronic book. And I thought, what a great way to share these fantastic stories with a wider audience and make them accessible to everybody. So when I started to do this, the first book I did with a publisher, the second time around I decided to do it myself, which was great working with a team of people to help me put it together, is I decided very specifically not to heavily edit it, not to totally rewrite the stories, you know, kind of clean them up a little bit for grammar. Maybe the second one's a little more edited than the first, but really try to maintain, as you said, the personality of the caller, because I think that's really important because after all, it's their story.
Exactly. And I know I really enjoy a good ghost story, and I like hearing it from the person that's experienced it.
Yeah. And it's really interesting when I started, I started Paranormal Podcast back in 2005, as I mentioned earlier, almost 9 years now. And I started later on in 2009, a few years later, I started Campfire. And I thought, well, this will be kind of a cool thing. It'll be kind of fun because it's just fun to hear Campfire stories. And certainly that part of it exists. But I've gotten a lot of feedback from people who said, hey, Jim, you know, this show means more to me than just that because it's given me the courage to share my experiences. Or I heard someone in California who had the same experience I did, or someone in the United Kingdom or in Australia, and it made me feel not so alone. And I never kind of intended it to be a kind of paranormal support group of the air. I don't claim to be any kind of, counselor or anything like that. Far from it. But I do think it is kind of neat that people, and I think that's a cool thing about your show and all of the different programs and the blogs on the internet and the Twitter feeds and the Facebook feeds, people like us who are interested in these things and who have had experiences, now we don't need to feel alone any longer. And I think everybody mm-hmm. can relate to a ghost story.
Absolutely. And I was wondering, you know, there are so many people with so many stories, and I'm wondering if this question comes up a lot, you know, do you think that it's more activity that's happening now, or just people are more willing to tell their story?
I personally think it's more people willing to tell their story, because if you talk to almost anyone, they have stories in their family that go back generations, but people were always kind of afraid. They might tell it in small groups. They might, you know, when the family's by the fireside or in the old days on the porch or whatever it might be, they might tell the story to a few people. And I think almost everybody knows about a story from, you know, great Aunt Bessie or grandma or grandpa. So I think the stories were always there. And I think if this mm-hmm. stuff exists, and I do think it does exist, by the way, mm-hmm. I think that it's always been a part of mankind's experience. It's just, I think that there was a stigma. And with all the TV shows and shows like Coast to Coast and now the internet wave coming in of all the different podcasts and blogs and so forth, I think now there's no reason to be quiet anymore. You know, if you had something happen to you, why not express it? Because there's millions of other people just like you all over the globe.
Right. And there's that anonymity of the internet, too.
That's true. Because mm-hmm. somebody could call on my show and say that, you know, they're Mary from Pennsylvania or wherever it might be. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to be identified. Whereas, you know, people still might be a little reluctant to share their experiences maybe with their coworkers or non-family friends or people who aren't that close. So there probably is some of that stigma left, but I think it's lessening all the time.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Now, I know, you know, John and I, we investigate, you know, he's the founder of the team that I belong to, and we've heard a lot of stories from people. Now, have you ever investigated or have you?
No, you know, that's an interesting question. I get that all the time. People think because I do this that I investigate. And I'll kind of give you a little background, if you want, of how I got started in doing the podcast.
Sure, absolutely. Part of this.
Well, the truth is I've been fascinated with the paranormal since I was a little kid. As I've said many times on my shows, my dad had a couple of great paranormal stories, and he's a real salt of the earth guy. He was a steel worker, not the kind of person who was trying to get in touch with his inner self, or he doesn't have, hold crystals or put pyramids under his bed or anything like that. And he had a couple of great stories. So I think that piqued my interest as a little kid. And then also a show that I'll point to that many of us, my age, I'm in my mid-40s, would point to is In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy. And I started watching that and started reading books and had always been interested in it. Coincidentally, I was also always interested in broadcasting, went to school for it, ended up working in the broadcasting field, but in the business side of it, but not in front of the mic. Mm-hmm. Although I had studied, broadcasting from in front of the mic, as I do now. And for about 13 years, I had worked in the media, but not as a, quote, talent. And it really bugged me, and I thought, well, there goes that dream. I'll never have that chance. And then in 2005, I heard about this thing called podcasting. And I said, well, you know, it might not be something that will get me worldwide acclaim or anything like that, but I can pursue broadcasting, which is a love of mine. But it has to be in a subject that I'm genuinely interested about, something that has always interested me. And I thought about it. And there's certain things in your life that you have an interest in,
right?
You know, sports, music, politics, whatever it might be. And I thought of those things, and I didn't think I could add anything. But I thought about, well, when I go in a bookstore or a library, at that point, people were still going to bookstores, although not so much now. What's the section I go to? And I thought, always the paranormal section. If I'm browsing through the cable channels, what do I look for? Paranormal programs. And I thought, that would be neat. I could do this show for 6 months. And not only would I get to pursue broadcasting, which I love, and I also am a bit of a geek, so I love tech too. So podcasting, yeah, paranormal podcasting is the perfect triangulation of all my interests. But then I thought, I'll have all this paranormal stuff figured out because I'll get to talk to people, if I'm lucky, like Stanton Freeman on UFOs,
oh,
and Brad Steiger. and Brad Steiger about ghosts. And I'll talk to all these really smart people who have studied this for all this time, and I'll have all the answers. Now, what's funny is, Sue and John, is that I've been doing this for almost 9 years now. I find that I successively each year have more questions that I don't have any answers. It's fascinating to explore. It's changed the way I've thought about some things, but I still have an abiding belief that there's something to some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love what I do. And going on about 2 years ago, I was able to make this my full-time job.
Awesome.
And I'm just very thankful to the listeners, and I'm glad that we're able to provide a service that they want to tune into and consume the content. We're very grateful.
Well, it's excellent, and I know I enjoy it, and I know a lot of other people enjoy it. That's an understatement. It's very interesting. You were saying you were left with more questions than answers, and John and I were just speaking, and we talk a lot, and he was just actually saying the same thing about us investigating.
Right.
Yeah, right. I've actually said the same thing. I'm left just – I literally minutes before you called, I told her, I said, you know, I've been doing this for a long time investigating. And I don't have any answers to it. Like, I'm left with more questions now than I ever had before I even started doing it. And I was telling her, like, you go to these clients and you know, they want you to come investigate their house. And you go there, and right away, they're expecting an answer. And
right.
I try to tell them, you know, these things that are happening, there are no explanations for them. You know, you want an explanation for something that there are no explanations for. And, I mean, I can validate that there's things going on in your home,
right,
with the equipment and stuff that we're using, but you know, how it's occurring, I can't tell you. I have no idea. And what I was telling Sue is the only way that you could genuinely come up with a possible answer is to go into a haunted location and literally live there 24 hours, you know, just steadily investigate 24/7 around the clock, documenting everything that's happening, you know, equipment throughout the whole house, just documenting everything. When something does happen, you can document, you know, change of temperature, electrical, magnetic field fluctuations, things like that. And as investigators like we are, we don't have that opportunity, you know?
Well, one thing I wanted to say, though, is I don't want to in any way belittle what investigators do, because I don't do it. I just think that my greatest contribution, mm-hmm. Back to Sue's question, which I didn't fully answer, I apologize, I got off on a tangent, but the point is I respect what you guys do. And specifically ghost hunters that go about it in a respectful way. And but I don't think that I mean, there are a lot of people out there doing what you do, and I will never have your expertise or knowledge in that area. But I think what I can do to be of greatest service is to bring experts and authors. In fact, I may want to have you guys on the show at some point. To give their experiences and share those. So that's where I think that my proper kind of role is. Doesn't mean I would never go out on an investigation or something, but I don't see that being my main calling, as it
sure.
were.
Sure. Well, have you ever had a paranormal experience?
Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, there's one in the first book, and this is not going to be one that will make anybody's mouth drop open. It wasn't like a full body apparition, but it's one of those little synchronicities that, you know, some people could say, well, that was just a crazy coincidence. Mm-hmm. I tend to not think it is.
Sure.
My brother passed away in 1999. Mm-hmm. He was 28 years old, or actually 27. He was going to be 28 that year. And this was down south. My family at that time lived in West Virginia. I lived in the Cleveland area, where I still live, where I was born and raised, basically, in this particular area. And go ahead. Oh, I was just getting a little feedback there. Sorry
about
that.
Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead.
Anyhow, I was driving back with my wife, back from the funeral. We're going through southern Ohio. And if you're familiar, it's kind of rural area, and radio stations will mm-hmm. drop in and out. And I came across one of this kind of, they call it, or they used to call it, I don't think they're around as much anymore, but music of your life, like Frank Sinatra, mm-hmm. Dean Martin, Nat King Cole, that kind of stuff. And I've, you know, I like a lot of different kinds of music, and I certainly like some of that, Sinatra particularly. So I thought, well, we'll listen to a little bit of this. Might as well listen to something. It's not going to change anything, the fact that my brother died and we've had this tragedy, you know, when you want to just think about something else. So we turn it on this station. And a song comes on, and it's an instrumental, and it kind of rings a bell, but I couldn't figure out what it was or who was the artist, because, again, there was no singer. It was just an instrumental. And my brother was autistic, and something that he really enjoyed, which is kind of a bizarre off-the-wall thing, but as a kid growing up, he loved, and it was still on TV in the 70s when we were really little kids, was the Lawrence Welk Show. Don't ask me why. Wonderful, wonderful. But that's something he enjoyed. So anyhow, the disc jockey comes on. And he says, now, of course, that is the great 1960 hit Calcutta by Lawrence Welk.
Hmm.
And some people may say, well, Jim, that was just a coincidence. I can tell you, I don't think I've ever heard Lawrence Welk, a full song of Lawrence Welk on the radio before or after that. And we just happened to be driving through this particular part of southern Ohio when we just happened to turn on this particular radio station, and it happened to come through. And I don't mean he kind of liked Lawrence Welk. It's like one of his top three or four like things. I don't know.
Okay,
he just had kind of different tastes. And to me, that was just him saying, hey, big brother, I'm okay. Don't worry about me. Everything's cool. And that's kind of the way I took it. Maybe I'm just telling myself that, but I think some way he made that happen. And I think that people beyond can do things like that.
Oh, absolutely.
And, it was cool.
I agree with that. And it's funny, you know, people are really so quick to dismiss those kinds of things. And I'm all for people being skeptical. I think it's a very good thing.
Yes.
But I don't think to be dismissive is a good thing. And right. I had an experience myself where I think my uncle had died. Oh, gosh, I think it had been probably about a year or so. And I was in an apartment, and I was half moved in. I was looking for something. It was my birthday. I pulled out a drawer. All of a sudden, I smelled this pipe tobacco, and I'm like, mm-hmm. it's cherry pipe tobacco. I'm like, and my uncle immediately came to mind, and I look in the drawer that I'm looking in, and I'm rooting around, and I see this card. It was a birthday card from him from
wow.
a couple years
wow.
previous. And I thought, well, I don't remember saving this, and wow, hey, thanks for the happy birthday. But, you know, some people would just dismiss that as, oh, well, you just found the card, and you were thinking about your uncle.
Right.
You know, maybe, maybe not.
Right.
But to me, it meant something. And I think that's another part of you know, some of these stories is, you know, it means something to that person. And right. I don't think that it really can be dismissed that easily.
And it's interesting because I think the paranormal activity kind of, and in my latest book, you'll see this. You said you were partially through reading it. There's kind of these spooky and scary and frightening experiences. Mm-hmm. And then there's some very moving and touching yeah. ones. And you guys really, you have definitely more experience in the field in terms of being out investigating these things. But to me, it seems like paranormal activity is probably some kind of continuum, just like our life mm-hmm. is here. There's happy things, there's sad things, there's good things, and maybe there's not so good things.
Just like life.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, I was wondering, too, you know, you've spoken with people from all over the world. Do you notice a particular common theme in experiences?
I think the common theme is there is a common theme. It seems to me that there's not a great bit of difference. Now, the people I talk to, you know, are either, they're English speaking. So there's not a lot mm-hmm. of people outside the kind of the Western culture. I mean, we have people from all over Europe who speak English. We've had people from Japan who speak English. We've had people from Australia. But those are mainly, most of the cultures that we deal with are Western cultures. But across Western cultures, or Western style cultures, even though Australia is technically East, mm-hmm. there seems to be a ton of commonality and not a lot of difference.
Yeah.
Not a lot of difference. It seems like the same experiences. And I'll have somebody in Australia that will tell me a tale that sounds like a tale I hear from somebody in Paducah, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, kind of increases the thought that this stuff is real, because there really are commonalities.
The human experience as a whole, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I really love hearing ghost stories. I mean, that's part of my favorite thing when we go out on investigations. I don't know about you, John. I really like, and I don't know if that sounds horrible, but I really like hearing about what's going on and the story itself. Sure, I like to investigate, but I kind of want to hear the stories. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way. You know, I go to an investigation, I want to hear, you know, what they've been experiencing. And I like to compare it to some of the other investigations that we've done. And a lot of it literally is the same as, you know, what they're experiencing and seeing. Like these black things with red eyes. You see these black shadow figures with red eyes.
Yeah, we had a lot of that.
We've had that in so many cases, and they all involve children, which I don't get. And we actually capture something like that on video. This black form that just came out of nowhere and glided across the room and happened over like a 15-minute period.
Yeah,
and
it's creepy.
It's really creepy, and we were literally right downstairs while this was going on, and we really had no idea that it was even taking place.
Well, we were having our own experiences in the kitchen with the lights flying across the ceiling, and it was crazy.
It was pretty wild. I've never seen lights, like light anomalies with the lights on, different colored lights, red and green. It was something I never really experienced before. I was shocked.
And the thing is about these things is that they're very emotional for people.
Yes.
Many times what I will find is I'll have somebody that has a story that's 20, 30, 40 years old, and you can hear the emotion in their voice when they're talking about it.
Yes. I mean, I'm sure. I mean, when I tell the stories of the, because I've had paranormal activity my entire life, and when I am reliving that story, I'm literally reliving that story when I'm telling it. So I imagine other people feel the same way.
Now, I do have a story here that's actually starts over actually 50 years ago. I don't know if you'd be interested in hearing it, but I think it's a pretty cool one. Well, this is one of my favorites from the latest book. It's called A Nightmare Before Elm Street. And Ooh. It's Frank from Colorado that told me this story. Now, when he was 5 years old, he lived in Illinois. It sounded like it was at some military housing. His dad was off serving, and His mom was Japanese. She had recently been in the country about 5 years. So I'm assuming maybe he had been stationed over in Japan or something and they met, something like that. So anyway, the dad was away and the mom was there with the family. It was our caller and his young sister. And he said that he always felt kind of uncomfortable in the particular home. He said that the house frightened him and he had a lot of nightmares. And again, keep in mind, this is 1961 that this starts. Mm-hmm. So there was this one particular night and he had this dream. And in the dream, he was in his backyard. There was a hill in the backyard. A door opened out of the hill. And during this dream, a figure came out of the hill and was chasing it. And this is in 1961. This person had a long black coat on. And had long fingers with knives on them.
Oh.
And he was running from this figure in the dream and he fell. And in his dream, he was trying to drag himself away. And just before this figure got to our caller, Frank, he woke up.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, at that point, he had shared a room with his sister, who was only four. And he woke his sister up and said, "Get mom, because I can't move my legs." Mm. Doctor came, because at that point back in the day, they used to have house calls still, and said, "Who scared this child? Who scared this child so badly? He can't move his legs." And they said, "We don't know. He must have had a nightmare." And it took a few days before he could move his legs and walk again. His grandma would come over and do kind of rudimentary physical therapy and got his legs going again. And throughout his adolescence, he said that he would have this dream. It wouldn't get as far as it got. But he would associate it with being sick. Every time he would have it, he would have kind of like a fever or something like that. So it kind of stalked him throughout his teenage years.
Hmm.
So let's fast forward to quite a few years later, 1988. And he had a friend, a lady friend, and she gave him a VHS tape of a movie called Nightmare on Elm Street. He'd never seen it before, so he took it home, and he popped it into, and this dates a little bit, his VHS player. He turned it on, and he said, "I thought I was going to have a heart attack, because when I first saw the Freddy Krueger character, I realized that it was the same person who was in his nightmare in 1961.
Oh, my goodness.
Freddy killed kids in his dreams. He said he'd always told his late mother, "I thought if he had caught me that he would have killed me. That he would have died in his sleep." He says he lived that movie over 20 years, almost 30 years before it was made. I mean, that's
wild.
A pretty remarkable story.
Yeah. It's wow. That's crazy.
Now, I actually heard on a host on another show told me this. I haven't independently verified it, but that the original story, Nightmare on Elm Street, was kind of spun off of some real life happenings with people that were having dreams and they were dying in their sleep.
I think
somewhere in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if there's a tie-in there. I don't know if it's a cultural thing. I don't really know. But
that's
it's amazing to me that this man had this experience in 1961, many years ago, now over 50 years ago. And over 20 years later, almost 30 years later, he sees the character in a Hollywood movie. It's
that's
pretty wild.
That is wild. Yeah. I'm not often speechless. Well, I'm not technically speechless, but that's crazy.
Yeah, it is. I don't, you know, it kind of hints to me maybe there's some kind of collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we all tap into many of the same things. And that's why it always amazes me about ancient history. And I think that's why some people, I'm not sure I'm in that camp, but it does give you food for thought. Some people think about things like ancient aliens and things,
mm-hmm.
because you see these cultures that had no way to communicate, but they would have the same memes. They would
yes.
have the same stories. They would have similar figures in their artwork. It mm-hmm. makes somebody think, well, are we all tying into the same thing?
Exactly. I mean, if you look at things now, I mean, people can say, oh, it's the internet. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's that. But how do you explain it back then, you know, with the Aztecs and
exactly.
the Egyptians and the same building structures? And yeah, I could go off on a tangent, but we only have an hour. Tonight we are speaking with Jim Harold with regards to his numerous exploits. We do have, we've been talking about his books and his podcasts, and welcome back everyone, and welcome back, Jim. So happy to have you.
I'm glad to be here. By the way, I just want to mention, if people do want to check out my stuff, jimharold.com, J-I-M-H-A-R-O-L-D.com. They can find the free podcasts and also link to the book, and if people are interested in learning more.
Excellent. Yes, I would definitely encourage everyone to buy both books. They are awesome. If you like a good ghost story, I was just saying I've been reading them every night. I've been reading ghost stories every night and waking up. I don't know if this is an advertisement or a warning. I've been waking up scared. So now you were going to tell us another story.
Yes, this is one of my favorites from my new book, Campfire 2. Now, this one's called Not Just Any Painting. Now, this, similar to our last story, this happened to our caller when he was very young. He was around 4 years old. Now, previously to that, his mom had broken up with his dad, or vice versa. I don't know the background, but they were split. So him and his sister moved in with another mom and her daughter. So it was the two moms and the three kids. And his mom had gone to an estate sale to buy some things for the place. And something that she found were a bunch of pictures. Now, these weren't prints. These were actually original painted pictures. Hmm. Some finished, some unfinished. And he said what was interesting about the basement where these pictures were located, that there was a scene on top of the ceiling. Instead of just a blank, you know, ceiling like you normally see, there was part representing heaven, part hell. And his mom asked about it, and they said that these people that had owned the place were into something kind of dark, not particularly satanic, but something dark. Mm-hmm. So anyway, she picked out a painting that she thought was particularly beautiful. It portrayed a lady with blonde hair sitting on a rocking chair in a white gown. So she brought it home. She put it up, and the first thing strange that started happening was that the picture would just randomly fall off the wall. And there was no physical reason for this to happen, but it would happen, and it would happen several times. And then things got a little weirder. Now, they lived on the upstairs. There was a downstairs, but he said the place was pretty echoey. And in a few days, things started getting interesting. In the middle of the night at about 2 or 3 a.m., they would start to hear a lady downstairs crying very softly. They didn't know exactly how to take it. And the first time it happened, both of the moms came to the room and they listened. But eventually it went away and everybody went about their business. Next night it happened again. The crying was just a little bit louder. It was kind of like moaning and sobbing. Hmm. Our caller said he envisioned this figure, maybe with her hands on her eyes, crying, looking down into her lap. That's the kind of crying it was, he says. A few nights go by, and it happens again. And at this point, the two moms are really scared. They just knew that this was going to keep happening. And then finally, the final night it happened, it started out softly, and it got louder and louder. And then it went explosive. He said it was so loud you could literally feel the crying through the walls, like a woman was just crying and bawling her eyes out. Mm-hmm. The two moms came to the room, and they were so shocked and scared, so they immediately took action. They grabbed the kids, turned the lights on, didn't even dress them in, you know, regular clothes. They were still in pajamas. And they said, there's something going on down there, and we're getting out right now. So they walked down the stairs. They don't walk by where where the sound's coming from, but they do walk down the stairs. They walk out to the parking lot. Now, the way that it was set up, from the parking lot, you could see into the apartment. And because they didn't have any blinds or any window treatments or anything like that. And they look into the apartment. And guess what they see? They see a lady with a white gown sitting on their rocking chair in the living room. Rocking.
Oh boy.
The same lady who was in the painting.
Oh,
the moms start to scream, and they're trying to get the car started, and they were having trouble getting it started because they were so nervous. And eventually they got it started. They took them to the one grandma, and the mom came back to get some stuff, not including the painting. and they never went back there again.
That's interesting. It's almost like, was that a premonition, that painting, or was that her stepping out of the painting? It makes you think.
Yeah, and that's truly, you know, some of the stories that we get are kind of Twilight Zone worthy. Mm-hmm. and that's one of them. And, you know, I would never be one to say that it's impossible. Oh, sure. Because I think that we live in such a mysterious, universe. I think it was Plato had the parable of the cave or something like that. Mm-hmm. The idea that a man, you know, the world's basically like a man chained to a wall looking at the shadows on the cave, and he thinks the shadows on the cave represent reality, but they're mm-hmm. just shadows on a cave, you know, of other things going on. And I kind of think that's how we are.
Yeah.
I think we only get a very small sliver of what's going on, and probably whatever's really going on is just so much more mind-blowing than we can even imagine.
It reminds me, and I think it was Men in Black at the very end where they zoom out, and you see Earth, and they zoom out some more, and then there's these two hands playing marbles.
Right.
To me, right. That always was, I don't know, people laugh at me, but I think that it's, I don't know, I thought that was a little profound.
Yeah. But that's true. You know, I do think that that's something like that is possible. We may be less than ants, you know, in many ways.
Cancer cells in some body.
Well, I hope not.
No, I know. I'm just being a smarty pants. But, you know, it's that idea. You never know. I mean, with atoms and not that I don't know science. But that kind of brings me to something that John and I talk about a lot. I'm not sure. How do you feel about aliens?
Well, I just think mathematically they're likely to exist. Mm-hmm. I think they probably are out there somewhere. And mm-hmm. I don't think it's impossible that they have possibly visited us.
Yeah.
I don't know that for a fact. I wouldn't, you know, bet the house on it.
Oh, sure.
But I think it's certainly, think it's possible. And what's interesting to me is the way that they are depicted by people who say they've come in contact with them. Mm-hmm. And if you look back, for example, in the 1950s, people said they were blonde-haired and blue-eyed.
Oh.
And today, most people who see them say that they're the prototypical gray with the big grays. Eyes, the egg mm-hmm. head, the slit for a mouth, and so forth, short. What I wonder is if there are aliens and they're visiting us, if they can't shapeshift.
Oh, yeah.
Into a form that we expect and
right.
that we could deal with. And maybe in the 50s, that was blonde-haired and blue-eyed Nordic-looking aliens. And now that's, you know, what we see from Close Encounters of the Third Kind
right.
and every other alien movie made since then. So, I think it's certainly possible. I think that the government probably knows a heck of a lot more about the UFO phenomena than mm-hmm. they're willing to tell us.
Oh, sure.
I do think a certain percentage of those are military experiments and things. You know, when people see craft and things going in the sky at improbable speeds and angles, I think some of that may be military mm-hmm. that is being mistaken. But I think some of it's more. And the truth is, let's ask ourselves, I mean, how many things does our government hide from us? If there really were little green men aiming to take over the world or who have visited,
would they really tell us,
you know?
Yeah.
And the thing that they would do, I would think, is that they would try to make everyone who believes that look silly by disinformation and mm-hmm. so forth. I mean, if you look at, and the same thing applies to ghost hunting. If you watch, for example, local TV, and every time one of these stories come on, first of all, they whip out the X-Files music, and then the anchor arches yep. his eyebrow or her eyebrow, and he says something like, you know, citizens in Northwest Pennsylvania say they've seen something in their skies, and Channel 5's Bill Johnson's there to see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then they come back and they all kind of laugh and joke, ha, 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 have you ever seen one, Steve? Not yet, but I haven't been drinking enough, Phil. You know, and
right.
it's always exactly the same thing. Now, who's to say that that little meme wasn't somehow started by some disinformation people? That doesn't mean that I think that every anchor who participates in that is part of the plot, as it were.
Right.
I don't. I just think it's become the convention. And now when we have a story like that, because in my opinion, news people, having had exposure to the media, and having worked in the media, mm-hmm. I think that we put people in the media on a pedestal.
Oh, yeah.
In the mainstream media, and we think they're smarter than they really are. The truth is that particularly people in TV news, for example, they're like peace workers, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like I've got to make 50 widgets within the hour.
Right.
So I've got to get so many minutes filled in this newscast. What's the easy way to do it? Oh, when we have a UFO or a ghost story, we make fun of it. We play the X-Files music and we just filled 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not some great plot, but maybe way back when it started that way.
Right.
And somebody said, let's plant some stories ridiculing this and get people thinking that the way to deal with it is to ridicule it. And all of a sudden, it takes hold on its own, and that's the way we treat a UFO or ghost story.
Mm, that's a good point.
Yeah, very good point.
What I was wondering, you know, John and I have actually talked, and we've been talking to, you know, some past guests, we've been talking to some clients of ours, and just kind of asking the question, and we've been finding that a lot of people that have had haunting experiences have also seen UFOs.
You know, that's an interesting point. And earlier I had said that doing these shows in some ways has changed my way of thinking about some of this. Now, I will say, and I want to be very upfront about this, and maybe some of your listeners might not like this statement, but I think a lot of what we think is paranormal is not paranormal.
Right. No, I would agree.
It's we're mistaken. You know, people see sometimes what they want to see, hear what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people, well-meaning people are mistaken. Then, unfortunately, we have the hoaxers, which are, you know, the bane of existence.
Yes.
And that I really have a problem with. And then we have probably a small percentage of stuff that there's really, really something to. But I do seem to, the more people I talk to, that paranormal, I used to think that the paranormal was like buckets.
Mm-hmm.
And in this bucket, you had UFOs. And in this bucket, you had ghosts.
Yep.
And in this bucket, you had telekinesis. And then I'm starting to wonder if it all may be somehow connected.
Yeah.
Because there does seem to be cross-pollination. And it's something over time. And I've talked to some people like Brad Steiger, I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. who's fantastic and a legend. And I had asked him about that, and I think people like him are thinking more along those lines as well, is that all of this somehow may be somehow connected.
Yeah, I mean, even down to Bigfoot sightings and all of that. I mean, I've talked to a couple of Bigfoot, quote-unquote, experts, and, you know, they report the same thing. People are seeing UFOs, they're seeing Bigfoot, they're having paranormal experiences, they're seeing UFOs. I mean, it's just... I wonder if we really knew what was going on, would it our minds be blown? Totally. It
literally explode.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is also, I think, and I've talked to people about this recently, the idea that there might be some kind of trickster element to the paranormal.
Mm.
Like somebody's messing or something. No, I'm not saying in all cases, but I'm saying in some cases, something's messing with our minds. Something's playing tricks on us. And maybe they play tricks in different forms. Just a thought.
No, that's when you said that, it reminded me of a big dollhouse. Like somebody's playing The Sims.
Right.
and they got the haunted house version. And we right. just happen to be The Sims.
There you go.
Someone's fast forwarding through this right now. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
No. No, back to your book, though. I'm wondering, you know, you've told us a couple stories. Do you have, and we've only got 7 minutes left. I can't believe it. Do you have a favorite story that you are able to tell?
Well, what I'll do is I'll do it really, really quick because I just think this is kind of cool. This one's from the UK, and this was Michelle. And she had a small son at the time. And they were sitting in kind of their parlor, their living room one day, and they had the windows open. It was a beautiful day, and outside they could hear planes going by, and they heard one of these old-time biplanes, like the Red Baron, you know, mm-hmm. the World War I type planes, and the three-year-old of the family says, oh, that sounds like the plane that killed me, and she said,
wow.
Really? And he was being very blasé and matter-of-fact about it, and she just let him go because she didn't want to lead him in any direction, wanted to see where it went. He said, yeah, you remember when I had another mom, I was a man and I was called Stephen.
Mm.
She said, okay. He said, oh, yes, I used to live with my mom in London. My girlfriend used to come around and we would all go down to the pub on the corner. Keep in mind, this boy was three.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, yeah, right, right. And he said, yeah, we were sitting in the front room of my mom's house and we were all listening to the radio. And all of a sudden it went boom and there was blood everywhere. And he started to flail his arms and say, oh, oh. And he said, she says, it's very hard when you have a child like this because you don't want to plant thoughts in their head or feed them or move them in a certain direction. So she let it go. She didn't ask any more questions because she was afraid he'd start making things up. But now she says she wishes that she would have, because it would have been interesting to check out the story.
Yeah.
I never mentioned it again. He's 24 years old now, and he can't remember it at all. But she says she'll never forget it. And I think that just speaks to the mysterious nature of the world we live in and, you know, what this is all about.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, thank you so much for being on the show. It was such a pleasure.
Oh, it was, and I would invite your listeners to check out jimherold.com and know that the ebook is only $2.99, so I think that's a great deal, and I hope they'll check it out. And I have a free newsletter over there, free podcasts, the book, so I'm sure if you're interested in the paranormal, you will find something that will interest you. We just released our latest campfire where we talked to somebody, well, about a pretty spooky story. You'll have to check it out, but it's about a little boy who haunted a museum, and she saw him in full body apparition. Pretty spooky stuff.
Definitely. Everybody has to check it out. And I am fully endorsing the books. They are absolutely amazing. And John?
Yes?
I always ask you this every week. I don't know why. But where can people find you, John?
You can find me on Facebook, John Curley, or you can go to the Harrisburg Area Paranormal Society. Or you can go to my website. www.harrisburgareaparanormalsociety.com. Kind of long, but we got some cool videos on there and paranormal evidence and all kinds of good stuff. So go over there and check it out.
Very cool. And you can find me on Facebook, Sue Shensky. If you can spell it, you can find me. And we will see you next week. We have a lot of great things coming up. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for those that download the podcast. And have a great evening, everyone.